Hello, hello, and welcome back. I'm your host Kerim, and you are listening to Euroneuro, the Eurovision Song Contest show on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, broadcasting from the University of British Columbia, which is situated on the traditional, ancestral, and stolen territories of the Han Kamenyum-speaking Musqueam people. We are in the 29th episode of Euroneuro, where we are going backwards in recapping the Eurovision Song Contest year by year. And in this episode, we will be talking about Eurovision 1996. This edition of the Eurovision is special for me for two main reasons. First, Eurovision 1996 includes, to me, the best song ever sung on the stage of Eurovision. And second, this is the year I was born. And the contest was held roughly one month after my birth, so I think this great year with amazing songs is a way to honor the birth of a big Eurovision fan, which is me. So, let me start with a brief introduction to this very special episode of the Eurovision Song Contest. And Eurovision 1996 was held in Oslo, Norway, following the country's victory in 1995, which gave an end to Ireland's three-year winning streak. Although I have to note that the representative of the Norway that won the contest in 1995, the Band of the Secret Garden, was a mix of Irish and Norwegian members. So we can say Irish singers won the contest for 5 years in a row, from 1993 to 1996. Eurovision 1996 was held with a pre-qualification stage that involved a jury listening to the audio recordings of the participating songs and selecting 22 out of the 29 submissions to join Norway, previous year's winner, in the grand final. Germany didn't make it to the cut, and 1996 became the first Eurovision without Germany. Maybe that's why it was an exceptionally entertaining year. To me, Eurovision 1996 was marked by the presence of folk songs, which was possibly influenced by the previous year. In 1995, Norway won the Eurovision with the song Nocturne, which I am sure you have heard before, and it includes a lot of folkloric elements, both the tunes, instruments, and the lyrics themselves. Nocturne is a very interesting song with only 24 words, and the melody of the song is very popular by now, and I cannot wait to play it on the show in our next episode and talk more about it. But now, let me touch on or talk about the winning entry of Eurovision 1996. Ireland won Eurovision 1996 with the song The Voice by Eamonn Quinn, and I think it is the best song in the history of Eurovision. However, many fans at the time found the song old-fashioned, and at the night of the grand final, many fans left the arena where the contest was being held closer to the end of the voting sequence, when it looked like the song was about to win. This disappointment in the jury led to the televoting being tried in Eurovision 1997, and it persisted ever since. So, 1996 doesn't only mark the last time a 100% jury vote was used, but also it is the last year Ireland won the contest, up to now of course. The song, Irish winning entry, The Voice, was written by Brendan Graham, who also wrote the Irish winner of the 1994 contest, Rock and Roll Kids. Brendan Graham originally submitted the song to the band Dervish for them to consider participating the national final with. They didn't, I'm going to explain shortly why, but they did represent Ireland in Eurovision 2007, so they did went on to participate in the Eurovision. Anywho, after the song, the voice was advanced to the final, Brendan Graham, the songwriter, attended a performance by Anuna Chorale at the Christ Church Cathedral in Dublin, where he was struck by the voice of Anuna member Eamonn Quinn. He was so struck by her voice that he recruited Eamonn Quinn to perform The Voice on the national final, and out of the 8 songs in the national final, The Voice with Eamonn Quinn's performance was the clear winner. The 10 regional juries that took votes awarded the song 105 points, and this was 21 more points than the runner-up. So that they awarded the Eamonn Quinn and the song The Voice a chance to represent Ireland in the stage of the Eurovision. Before moving on to talking about and playing the song The Voice, I would like to make a parenthesis for the songwriter Brendan Graham. I will now mention how important he is to the Irish identity and how he has a connection with the previous year's Eurovision winner, Secret Garden, representing Norway. Brendan Graham is well known as an author alongside his songwriting, and he is the author of a best-selling series of three novels: The Whitest Flower, The Element of Fire, and The Brightest Day, The Darkest Night. This trilogy follows the story of an Irish woman, Ellen Rua O'Malley, and they are set against the backdrop of the Great Irish Famine and the mass and forced migration of Irish people to America. The first novel, The Whitest Flower, tells the story of Ellen Rua and her family during the famine, and I must say, very few books impressed me the way this one did. It explains the process of the very avoidable potato blight and how the imperialist policies of the British government brought the famine to the island of Ireland, causing a massacre. By bringing a family to the center of the story, Brendan Graham's style also helps the reader deeply connect to the human side of the suffering, and it does it in such an exquisite and vivid way that at one point of the book, where I'll be giving spoilers just now, at one point in the book, there was a scene where the famine was so bad that Ellen Rua O'Malley's family was unable to find any food. She forced her children, who are by then adults, and her husband to breastfeed off of her to prevent them from dying of starvation. And it was the scene was explained so impressively, effectively, that I was able to feel the pain and the suffering the characters did, so I had to pause for a few minutes before being able to continue reading. This shows how great an author Brendan Graham is, and he's also a great songwriter as well. So the Great Irish Famine took place between 1945 to 1952 with 1845 to 1852, with 1847 being the worst year, and it came to be known as the Black 47. The biological cause of the famine was a mold with the scientific name of Phytophthora infestans, infecting the potato crops. This fungus-like microorganism causes a disease called the late blight, or the potato blight, which leads to tissue breakdown and decay in potatoes, causing them to die. Irish people at the time, especially the majority of the Catholics that made up 80% of the population, were tenants in the land that they lived on, and the land was mostly owned by the Protestant ascendancy class, composed of English and Anglo-Irish families. The potato was not the only crop grown in Ireland, but majority of the other crops and the meat that was grown was sold to England or the landlords to be able to pay the high rents the landowners imposed on the tenants. These rents were heavily dependent on the number of children each tenant family had. Like, for example, if they had more children, the landowners would like hike up the rent very quickly, and being unable to pay these very high rents resulted in evictions. So the land and the rents, thereby the produce of the farmer families, were used as a means of population control on Irish people back then. The potato was adopted as a primary food source because of its quick growth and it being able to grow in a comparatively small space, and it could also be stored in high quantities in small spaces. By 1800, the potato had become a staple food for one in three Irish people, especially during winter. It eventually became a staple year-round for farmers. This was also accompanied by a population boom in Ireland during early 1800s, where the population of Ireland went quickly from 3.5 million to 8 million. A disproportionate share of the potatoes grown in Ireland were the Irish Lumper, a single species of potato, and this created a lack of genetic variability among potato plants. When there is lack of genetic variability among the population of plants, they become more susceptible to infections by microorganisms. So the lack of genetic variability means that there is less chance that there will be several strains of crops that will be resistant to the infection and will be able to grow no matter what. So this caused a majority of the crops being to be perished in the during the potato blight, and the Irish families had trouble finding food to feed themselves. Even though the origin of this disease is still unknown, it was traced back to the Toluca Valley in Mexico, and is thought to arrive in Europe through America, hitting Ireland the most severely. Ireland at the time was under the rule of the British government. Executive power laid in the hands of the Lord Lieutenant of Ireland and Chief Secretary of Ireland, who were both appointed by the British government. In the early stages of the famine, the Prime Minister of the Conservative government, the Tory government, Robert Peel, purchased £100,000 worth of corn in November 1845, corn and maize, secretly from America to counter the famine. This worked at first, but maize was sent to Ireland as whole dried kernels, but local mills couldn't process it. It had to go through a long milling process, and even then, it had to be cooked again before eating. Otherwise, it could cause serious stomach problems. So, even though Prime Minister Robert Peel tried to supplement or replenish the food, the food that he brought in was not suitable to be processed in the Irish mills. So, in October 1845, the Prime Minister Robert Peel tried to repeal the corn laws, which kept bread prices high, but his own party didn't support him, so he resigned. When no one else could form a government, he was brought back, and in March of 1846, he started public works in Ireland, and he finally repealed the corn laws in 1846. Trying to keep the food prices or bring the food prices down. But it didn't help much, but also this move caused a split in his party. And Peel resigned for good in June 1846. The government change in the British government worsened the effect of the Irish potato blight in Ireland, because the new Prime Minister, Lord John Russell of the Whigs government, followed a hands-off approach. He believed that the market itself would solve the food shortage without the interference by the government. And the government appointed treasurer, Charles Trevelyan, who was in charge of the government relief, had a laissez-faire approach as well. He limited the government's aid and let the Irish people starve to death. And his justification for this was that if the government helped, Ireland would become more dependent on the British government instead of fixing its own problems. But keeping the island under its rule while refusing to help them, of course, worsened the effects of the famine. The Russell government, in the end, stopped the relief programs, and while continuing the food exports, and that left many in Ireland without food, work, or money. They started new public works, but they were badly managed, and in early 1847, the Black 47, the government admitted this wasn't working, and they shifted to a direct food aid through workhouses and soup kitchens. But much of the cost fell on the local landlords, some of whom responded by evicting tenants or offering aid only if people converted to Protestantism, because, as I said earlier, majority of the landlords were belonged to the Protestant ascendancy class. Along with the British government, Queen Victoria at the time also provided very limited aid. The limit being the £2,000 at that time's currency. And she even prevented other countries such as Ottoman Empire to send aid exceeding the amount of hers. It is thought that Sultan of Ottoman Empire, Sultan Abdülmecid, wanted to give an aid worth of £10,000. But since Queen only gave 2,000, she prevented the empire to give more than that. So it is thought that the Ottoman Empire sent £2,000 in cash and the remaining amount in the form of food. But I currently cannot recall whether that food was admitted or not. So another key factor, along with the government and queen's approaches, that contributed to the severity of the famine was the Irish farmers keeping the healthy crops away from the starving population and selling them to England for profit. This is also explained in a book called The Star of the Seas by Joseph O'Connor, if I remember correctly. Yes, Joseph O'Connor, who is the brother of late Sinead O'Connor. This is a very great book as well. It tells the story of a coffin ship. Coffin ships are ships that Irish people used to immigrate to America for during the famine, but they were heavily packed, overloaded more than their capacities to profit off of the people, and in many of them, majority of the people succumbed to diseases such as typhus, if I remember correctly, cholera, and other types of infectious diseases, and they died and were kept in the basements of the ships to prevent the spread of the disease. That's why they are called coffin ships. And the book Star of the Sea by Joseph O'Connor is kind of a detective story. It tells the story of a murder in a ship making the journey from Ireland to New York. And in that book, it is also told that Irish farmers keeping the healthy crops away from the starving population was a big factor contributed to the severity of the famine. Also, James Joyce, the national writer of Ireland, in his legendary book Ulysses, neatly summarizes the charges that are often made in this respect. He says, and I'm quoting from the book Ulysses, "Even the Grand Turk sent us his peace trees," one of his characters said in the middle of an argument or a harangue against the British. And the character continues, "But the Sassenach," the Englishman, "tried to starve the nation at home while the land was full of crops that the hyenas bought and sold in Rio de Janeiro." In other words, like this was a quote explaining how the government, queen, and the Irish farmers contributed to the severity of the famine. The belief is that Ireland was supplied with crops, but these were kept out of the hands of the people and sold at a profit abroad, leaving the Irish themselves to starve. To conclude this part, the Great Famine had a devastating impact. Over a million people died, and at least another million were forced to leave Ireland. The population fell by around 25% in just a few years, from 8.2 million to 6.6 million, if I remember correctly. And while the potato blight was the natural cause, the British government's slow response and strict economic policies made things far worse. Many believe that more could have done and sooner, and the famine was wasn't just a tragedy of nature. It was also a failure of policy with lasting effects on Ireland's people and history. It also led to the uprising against the British government, the Easter Uprising in 1916, but I will talk more about that in the episode covering Eurovision 1970. Having said that, I will go back to Eurovision and Brandon Graham, of course. One last thing I want to note is that the band Secret Garden, who won the competition in Eurovision 1995, representing Norway, composed a song, let me say, but they haven't written lyrics on it. The lead singer of the band at the time, while working on the tune, read the same book that I told you about, The Whitest Flower by Brandon Graham. And like me, he was also so impressed that he thought only Brandon Graham could have written the lyrics to the tune that they composed. And Brandon Graham did. And the song that he wrote the lyrics to is You Raise Me Up. I'm sure most of you know about this song. It is a very popular song covered by many people, including Josh Groban, Celtic Woman. But originally it belongs to Secret Garden and the lyrics are written by Brandon Graham. This concludes my part about Great Irish Famine and Brandon Graham. I will go back to Eurovision 1996 now. And first, we will hear the winning entry, The Voice by Emar Quinn. Then we will continue by listening to other songs that I like from Eurovision 1996.
Der gode gamle veteran Noel Keelan.
Listen, my child, you say to me, I am the voice of your history. Be not afraid, come follow me. Answer my call and I'll set you free. I am the voice in the wind and the pouring rain. I am the voice of your hunger and pain. I am the voice that always is calling. That will always be filled with my sorrows and my
Riding a bike missing from your life? No worries. Ride On Bike Shop has got you covered. Ride On has the best deals in town for new and used bikes, top-notch servicing, and all the parts or accessories you've been dreaming about. Whether you've got a little one who needs to learn how to ride, or if you're about to go on the Tour de France, Ride On is the place for you. We'll also happily pick up your old bikes and recycle them back into the community. Located on 2255 West Broadway, we are open from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. from Tuesday to Saturday. That's R-I-D-E-O-N Bike Shop. See you there!
In the context of Vancouver's opioid crisis, CITR would like to take a moment to share some harm reduction strategies.
Try not to do drugs alone. When going out, let friends know what drugs you're taking and make sure someone has a naloxone kit. If you're able to, get your drugs tested before taking them.
Avoid mixing opioids with alcohol or stimulants. Remember that opioids can include painkillers prescribed by a doctor, and it's possible for any drugs to be contaminated with opioids.
Learn the signs of opioid overdose, which include, but are not limited to, unresponsiveness or unconsciousness, inability to speak, breathing that is slow, erratic, or has stopped completely, heartbeat that is slow, erratic, or has stopped completely, skin tone that has turned blue or gray, choking or gurgling sounds.
If you think someone is overdosing, call 911 immediately. Start rescue breathing and administer naloxone if you have it. You cannot get in trouble for being on drugs, so always call 911 in an emergency.
For more information about naloxone kits and training, visit towardtheheart.com.
Thank you and stay safe.
Welcome back, everyone. You are on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver and you are listening to Euroneuro, the Eurovision Song Contest show of CITR. In this episode, we are talking about Eurovision 1996. And before the break, we have talked about the Great Irish Famine and through the books of Brendan Graham, the songwriter of the winning song, The Voice, representing Ireland by Eimear Quinn in Eurovision 1996. Moving on, I'm going to play the songs that came in second and third in Eurovision 1996, which are the Norwegian and Swedish entries, both having folkloric elements. And I really like these entries. And it's remarkable that Norway, after their victory in 1995, managed to come in second. Ireland did the same thing after winning Eurovision in 1996, came in second in Eurovision 1997 after UK. So we will start with the Norwegian entry of I evighet, meaning for eternity, by Elisabeth Andreassen. This is a great song, by the way, one of my favorites from this year. And following that, we will hear the Swedish entry, which concluded the grand final on the night of grand final of Eurovision 1996. It's called Den Vilda, meaning the wild one, by the band One More Time. After these songs, I will be back with more from Eurovision 1996.
Dirigent Frode Tingnes.
I apologize for the dead air. I'm having a technical issue with YouTube ads. I'm going to fix that immediately and hopefully bring you back the great songs from Eurovision 1996. In the meanwhile, let me remember my YouTube password. Hopefully that was correct. Yes. Okay. Yes, that's me. Nope. Let's go back to YouTube. Eurovision 1996. And let's hear the Norwegian entry. Let's start with the Norwegian entry that came in second in Eurovision 1996. Ie Vi Get by Elisabeth Andreasen, and it will be followed by the Swedish entry of Den Vilda, meaning the wild one, by One More Time. Let's go one more time.
Lykke til, Norge.
Tvit Vibeton og dirigent Frode Tingnes.
Dagen går mot kveld, er borte, blir snart glemt, men alt vi ga, den står igjen, et frø som gror og vokse frem. Slik kjærlighetens vei, når den møter deg og meg. Først når vi lærer og forstår, vil den møtes om igjen.
Är veteranen Anders Berglund.
Maten och krusen.
medan snövlingor faller. Stjärnorna glistrar mot isen som klara kristaller. Där flyr han bort med den vilda, de rusar som virvlar i ett vattenfall. Fyllda av stolthet och vilja, rusar som virvlar i ett vattenfall.
Welcome back everyone, you are on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver and you are listening to Euroneuro, where we are talking about Eurovision 1996 in this episode. And we have just heard the Norwegian and Swedish entries, Evighet by Elisabeth Andreasen and Dan Vilda, The Wild One by One More Time, the Swedish entry. Two trivia facts about these entries. Norway finished second and became the highest ranking entry in the 12-point era with no 12 points. So the song received no 12 points from any of the countries. It received 3 10 points but still managed to finish second, which makes it the highest ranking non-12 point scoring song. For Sweden, this was the second straight year where they placed third with 100 points after Eurovision 1995. So moving on, I'm going to play three songs that I really liked. The Greek entry and the Portuguese entry. Two songs, Greek entry and Portuguese entry. Greek entry, just like the Norwegian one, has some folk elements, instruments and tunes. It's called Eme Foreme Tohimona Anasiatica, meaning we wear spring clothes in winter time, and it is performed by Mariana Eftratiu. The Portuguese entry is called O Meu Coração Não Tem Cor, meaning My Heart Has No Color, and performed by Lucia Moniz. This is an entry about parts of Portuguese culture from Europe, South America, and Africa. It mentions various dances and various music genres. It's one of my most favorite entries from this year. So let's hear the Greek and Portuguese entries back to back. After that, we will take a short break and I will be back with more songs. We'll be right back.
σαν να ξέρες ότι είχα να σου πω. Και όλα όσα πάθαμε ας τα να επιμένουν. Και όλα όσα πάθαμε ας τα να περιμένουν. Εμείς τα δύσκολα τα λύνουμε νυχιάτικα. Εμείς αλλάζουμε άνατες κυριακάτικα.
De aproximação entre os povos.
Dirigentar São Nunes Componeste, Pedro Osúria.
Meu coração não tem cor. Estamos de maré. We love electronic music sessions. Run for them life when I step into the jungle. We offer DJ workshops, open decks, pop-up parties, and more. Follow our socials such as Instagram, Discord, or join us through email, ubcelectronica@gmail.com.
Are you a writer?
Listener?
Dreamer?
Music nerd?
Want to cover artists?
Visit venues?
Write something?
Events?
Personal essays?
Anything.
Submit to Discorder magazine and then take it a step further on Hail Discordia with your hosts, Zoe
and Izzy. Hail Discordia is an audio translation of Discorder magazine. We interview writers, play music and soundscapes, and do a deep dive of each zine issue. Hail Discordia plays at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the third Thursday of every month on CITR 101.9 FM.
Submit something for the magazine and come onto the show. Or just tune in and listen. We promise it's worth it.
Welcome back, everyone. You are on CITR 101.9 FM and you are listening to the Eurovision Song Contest show of CITR, Euro on Euro. And before the break, we have heard the Greek and Portuguese entries for Eurovision 1996. Greek entry being the Emis Forame to Himona Anasiatica, meaning we wear spring clothes in the winter time. And the Portuguese entry being the Omegora Chao Now Temcor, meaning my heart has no color. By the way, before the song, sometimes you can hear the orchestra introduction, and before that, a short message from the government officials from the countries being represented. And before the Portuguese entry, we have heard the message from Antonio Guterres, who was then the Portuguese Prime Minister and currently the Secretary General to the United Nations. Moving on, I'm going to play the UK and France entries. The UK entry was the last Eurovision song to enter Billboard Hot 100 until Arcade, the Dutch entry of Eurovision 2019. And it was also the last UK entry to enter the top 5 of the UK chart until 2022, when Spaceman, the 2022 entry, debuted at number 2 following the contest. And the song UK, the British entry is Ooh Ah Just a Little Bit by Gina G. And Gina G's stage outfit was a gold Pachora band dress that had been rejected by Cher. The French entry, Divanit Bugale, is by Danar Brad and L'Héritage des Celtes, is a Breton entry. And this is the first entry in the Breton language in the Eurovision Song Contest. And the second one, the second and the last one up to now, is the again French entry of Fulan by Ahvan and Ahed, if I remember correctly, into Eurovision 2022. So we will hear these two songs, the British entry of Ooh Ah Just a Little Bit by Gina G and the French entry of Divanit Bugale, meaning May You Blossom Children, by Danar Brad and L'Héritage des Celtes.
To the United Kingdom's entry, and to you, Gina G.
Dirigenten heter Ronnie Dunstall.
You're my sweetest thing. Don't shy away. dirigenta Piotr Trench.
Die Dosten Bukale Arsenos Agagulode Roitkalon Dime Un Musga Ondazon Tomato Kalonu Vonesiu
One final welcome back everyone. You are on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver and we have reached the end of our Euroneuro episode for this month. I will close the show with a ballad like I always do. I will finish with the Croatian entry of Sveta Ljubav, meaning divine love, by Maja Blagdan. This song at the time had the highest, actually this performance featured one of the highest notes ever sung in Eurovision. A B flat 6. That record stood until 2021 when Eden Alin, representing the genocidal state of Israel, took it one step higher with a B 6 during her performance. In our next episode, we will be talking about Eurovision 1995. I cannot wait to listen to the winning song of that together. And until then, take care and goodbye.
Melodien heter Hellig kjærlighet. Dirigenten Allan Bielinski.
Ja ti priznajem sve. Sve je glupo sad bez tebe. I dok zlatna kiša pada na grad, ko zna gdje si ti se. Aj, 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 aj. Moja ljubav si ti. Ovo je vrijeme
bez milosti. Ti